On April 4th, 1968, in Memphis, the last day of his life, Martin Luther King Jr. phoned Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta with the title of his Sunday sermon, Why America May Go to Hell. If he had preached this sermon, the radical King would be well known.
Although much of America did not know the radical King, and too few know him today, the FBI and the U.S. government did. They called him the most dangerous man in America. They knew Reverend King was a revolutionary Christian, sincere in his commitment and serious in his calling. They knew he was a product of a black prophetic tradition, full of fire in his bones, love in his heart, light in his mind, and courage in his soul. Martin Luther King Jr. was the major threat to the United States government and the American establishment because he dared to organize and mobilize black rage over past and present crimes against humanity targeting black folk and other oppressed people.
Any such black awakening to the long history of oppression can either yield hatred and revenge or love and justice. This is why the prophetic words of Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel still haunt us today. The whole future of America will depend upon the impact and influence of Dr. King. The fundamental question is, does America have the capacity to hear and heed the radical King? Or must America sanitize King in order to evade and avoid his challenge?
King indeed had a dream, but it was not the American dream. King's dream was rooted in the American dream. It was what the quest for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness looked like for people enslaved and Jim Crowed, terrorized, traumatized, and stigmatized by American laws and American citizens. The litmus test for realizing King's dream was neither a black face in the White House nor a black presence on Wall Street. Rather, the fulfillment of his dream was for all poor and working people to live lives of decency and dignity.
King's dream of a more free and democratic America and world had transformed into, in his words, a nightmare, owing to the persistence of racism, poverty, militarism, and materialism. He called America a sick society. At one point, King cried out in despair, "I have found out that all that I have been doing in trying to correct this system in America has been in vain. I am trying to get at the roots of it to see just what ought to be done. The whole thing will have to be done away with," he said to his dear brother Harry Belafonte days before his King's death. "Are we integrating into a burning house?"
King's deep dissatisfaction with America did not mean disloyalty. In fact, King's dissent was a high form of patriotism. When he said that the U.S. government engaged at that time in a violent war in Vietnam was the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, he was not trashing America. He was telling the painful truth about a country that he loved. King was never anti-American. He was always anti-injustice. And in America and anywhere else, love of truth and love of country could go hand in hand.
The radical king was a spiritual giant who tried to shatter the callousness and indifference of his fellow citizens. Following his dear friend and comrade, Rabbi Heschel, King believed that indifference to evil is more evil than evil itself. And materialism, with its attendant hedonism and egotism, produces sleepwalkers deprived of compassion and zombies deficient in love. This spiritual crisis is not reducible to politics or economics. It is rooted in the relative decline of integrity, honesty, decency, and virtue, due in large part to the role of big money in American life.
King always had a healthy suspicion of all politicians of any color, owing to his critique of legalized bribery and normalized corruption in money-saturated American politics. He noted, "I have come to think of my role as one which operates outside the realm of partisan politics. I feel I should serve as a conscience of all the parties and of all the people."
The response of the radical king to our catastrophic moment can be put in one word: revolution. A revolution in our priorities, a reevaluation of our values, a reinvigoration of our public life, and a fundamental transformation of our way of thinking and living that promotes a transfer of power from tycoons and rich big shots to everyday people and ordinary citizens.
The radical king was first and foremost a revolutionary Christian, a Black Baptist minister and pastor whose intellectual genius and rhetorical power was deployed in the name of the gospel of Jesus Christ. King understood this good news to be primarily radical love in freedom and radical freedom in love, a fallible enactment of the beloved community, our finite embodiment of the kingdom of God. King's radical love can be heard in John Coltrane's A Love Supreme. This radical love of an intensely hated people is both liberating and contagious, just as this radical freedom of a thoroughly unfree people is both emancipating and infectious.
Like his great contemporary Dorothy Day, the Catholic saint who looked at the world through the lens of her heart, Dr. King understood radical love as a form of death, a relentless self-examination in which a fearful, hateful, egoistic self dies daily to be reborn into a courageous, loving, and sacrificial self. For both Dorothy Day and King, this radical love flows from an imitation of Christ, a response to an invitation of self-surrender in order to emerge fully equipped to fight for justice in a cold and cruel world of domination and exploitation. The scandal of the cross is precisely the unstoppable and unsuffocatable love that keeps moving in a blood-soaked human history, even in our catastrophic times. There is no radical king without his commitment to radical love.
King's revolutionary witness embodied in anti-imperial, anti-colonial, anti-racist, and democratic socialist sentiments was grounded in his courage to think, his courage to love, and his courage to die. Could it be that we know so little of the radical king because such courage defies our market-driven world?